Good morning. You're tuned to Bay FM, Community Radio for Byron Shire. Thanks for joining us this morning on The Colors of Byron. I'm Gail Q, and our guest is Serge Benhayan from Universal Medicine. Regular listeners to this program will have had the pleasure of hearing an interview with Serge just a few weeks ago at the end of November, and at that time, he agreed to join us again today to share with you, the listeners, the New Year's message relevant to the energy of 2010. So if you'd like to listen to the November interview, which we will make some reference to today, you can still do that from Serge's website, which is universalmedicine.com.au. Serge is the founder and director of Universal Medicine, which has been operating here in the Northern River since late 1999. We learned from Serge in the last interview that 17 years ago, he and his family moved here from Sydney, where he had been a professional tennis coach. And initially, he continued as a tennis coach after moving here. But then approximately 10 years ago, his soul called him to serve as a focalizer of the ageless wisdom. And since that time, Serge has healed hundreds, perhaps thousands, I'm not sure, of people from an array of diseases and afflictions of the spirit and soul. He's conducted innumerable talks, workshops, courses, and most importantly, perhaps, he's led by example how to lead an esoteric life. Good morning, Serge. Welcome back to Bay FM.
Good morning, Gail, and thanks for having me back so soon.
Oh, thank you for coming. Now, you've created a New Year's message, which is becoming a bit of a tradition. You've been doing this for several years now, and I'm here to help facilitate it to perhaps a different audience than normally is attending your workshops or reading on your website. Now, I intended to pick up on several points in your last interview that I hope to get you to talk further about today, and one of them was a comment that you made last interview, and that comment was that there's more love available today than ever before. And I see it's a big part of your New Year's message. So we're going to begin there, but I thought I'd just let the listeners know that our interviews are very spontaneous. While Serge and I communicate with each other in between interviews, it's not generally, in fact, it's probably never about the interviews. Right. I never tell him what I'm going to ask. He never has a chance to prepare any answers because he doesn't need to. He's drawing on the ageless wisdom. So, Serge, give us the audio version of your New Year's message for 2010.
The messages are always based on what is energetically going on. Every new year, we get an opportunity to have an energy released that will theme the year. And this has been going on since the year 2000, when the second coming of the Christ occurred. Now, the second coming of the Christ is really just an energy from the soul consciousness that was released for us, in effect, to get our act together. I mean, esoterically, it says it is called the light of self-salvation. But in normal street talk, it's really just an energy to help us get our act together, to self-save ourselves from our own lack of self-love, from our own bad habits, our ill doings, our ill choices, and so forth. Now, that energy has been increased at certain times throughout the last 10 years. But in particular, on August 17th of last year, 2009, it was increased substantially. That light hasn't increased since, but on 31st of December this 2009, we were given the opportunity to embody that light or that increase of love. And we can truly say today that there is more love than ever before in the energetic sense of the word, and in the true meaning of the word love, which is the spherical version of it from the soul. What we need to say is, how can we use that? How does that practically apply to us? How does that affect us, whether we're esoteric or not? And do we need to do the universal medicine work? And do we need to follow Serge or his teachings or whatever? We don't have any followers, but I'm using that term for the listeners who haven't who don't know us personally. Well, what's happening is that should one choose to get their act together, if we can continue along mm-hmm. this type of dialogue, then the energy is there to support us. The energy isn't the energy is there to support us in making us, helping us make better choices. And when we always talk about the New Year's resolution, in effect, we may keep that going for 7 to 10 days of the first period of January. But by the end of January, if not by the middle of January, we're already back into the old. And often people say we're not only back into the old, we're usually back into it in a much harder way.
Mm-hmm. Having taken a break.
Absolutely. So what the energy provides for us today is if somebody is sincere in saying, I want to make a true, better life, and a life that heads towards love, not just a better life from where I am, because if I'm drinking 50 cans of beer a day and I say, well, I want to drink 25, that's not really better. That's just an improvement from the disgrace that you're in, if I may say it like that.
Right, okay.
So if you're truly saying, I want to get back to love, so eventually I find myself, then the energy will pull you faster towards that love than ever before. That's mm-hmm. the New Year's message.
Right, okay, very clear. So let's just define love then, so that people don't think this is the particular romantic relationship that they might be in at the moment.
The New Year's message describes love very clearly, as did the last year's message, and we went into it in much more detail in last year's message, which is still up on the website. Mm-hmm. All our messages are up on the website. And it talks about the difference between the heart and the inner heart. Now, most humans know the love that's in the heart. And the heart center, as we know it, is a spiritual love. It is our togetherness as a human being. And it's a great place. And it's a great place to go there when things are going wrong. It's a place where we can find happiness. It's a place where we can find peace. It's a place where we can find relaxation and calm. But we all know that none of those are sustainable. Hmm. So what the esoteric just means innermost. So the esoteric way of life is saying, no, there's a deeper version of us, not a higher self, as the spiritual New Age describes it, but a deeper version of us. And that deeper version of us is the inner heart, or the innermost. And it's that place that has the qualities of the soul and not the qualities of the spirit. The qualities of the soul are not relaxation, calm, happiness, and peace. They are joy, harmony, love, and stillness. Those are, in essence, who we truly are and are truly sustainable once you connect to them. So once you connect to harmony and you become disharmonious, you can come back to harmony. It's a beautiful thing. So when you step away from harmony, you come back and you become disharmonious. You come back to harmony. If we go back to the heart, and we become peaceful. When we don't become peaceful, we tend to get quite aggressive, even warlike. So you can see that the oscillations of the heart are not as deep as the oscillations that can occur in the inner heart. So it's important for us all to develop an esoteric relationship with ourselves. Whether you use universal medicine or Serge's teachings or books or not, that's beside the point, and we're not here to say that you have to. What we're here to say is that there is an esoteric in us all, which means there's an innermost aspect to us all. That innermost aspect is the inner heart, and if we can connect to that, that will be a natural esoteric relationship we can have with our soul.
Mm-hmm. So if we used your phrase this morning about the opportunity to get our act together, well, how do we get our act together? So am I hearing that if we, from our inner heart, pledge to ourselves that this is what we want, is that sufficient to get us on the road? Is that going to do the trick?
The soul is closer to us than at any time before. And if we make the true call to be in the love of our soul, to be with our soul, in the true meaning of that word, not the mm-hmm. bastardized version, in other words, to enter into the esoteric version of who we are by choosing to be in our inner heart, and that soul's energy will pull you there faster than ever before. The soul doesn't say you have to give up your heroin, your alcohol, your this, your that, your guru, your religion. It doesn't say that. The soul says, we are love, come in. Bring all that with you, and whatever is not of truth will naturally dissolve. It doesn't say this is good or this is bad. It just says whatever is not of our fiery truth, it will dissolve. What we've got to do is be ready to let things go that don't belong in our inner heart. That's the difficult problem.
Yes.
Because people want to take in their all their luggage that they want to pack in there and their personal belongings, but they've got to be prepared to go in there and say, oops, that doesn't belong in here.
Okay. Now, in the message, which, by the way, listeners, if you would like to view the message in full, or you're one of those people who can take it in better from written word than through audio, you can get the message in full from the universalmedicine.com.au website. But continuing today, now, a lot of what you've been describing is the esoteric embracement of what's on offer to us now in this energy. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the esoteric, living an esoteric life that allows you to embrace this opportunity of there being more love available? And then I'd like you to talk about the other two perspectives that are possible. People, even though this truth exists, according to the esoteric philosophy, that love is more available than ever before, some people aren't going to believe that or feel that. And I'd like you to talk about why that is.
Okay, so I'll just reiterate and say that the esoteric is not a word that is owned by Universal Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
We don't own anything. We are custodians of a teaching, and that's all. There are different versions of the word esoteric out there. What you've got to find is the true esoteric, which is the inner heart. It's who you truly are, and is that which lives in your innermost. In there, your world will open up to different views, different perspectives, different ways of thinking, and different ways of being. That is what is called the unfolding path. It's a very personal relationship that should be taken upon the rhythms that you develop within your own inner heart. You should not look at anybody else and compare and try and speed yourself up. It is something that your soul will configure and navigate under rhythm with you personally. In as far as making the claim, as we do, that there's more love than ever before, the New Year's message actually says for some people, for many, there will be the contrary, the opposite, and it will contradict their reality, their life. And this is because there are three different versions in life. There are three different consciousnesses that we can create life with. There's the esoteric, which is the innermost. There's the exoteric, which is, we could say, the dweller on the threshold, the person who can have a foot in each camp. The exoteric is the person who has the opportunity to be in the esoteric but chooses to remain in the heart. Their views are good, their views are clear, their views are usually seeking bliss, happiness, and relaxation and calm. They have a good perspective of life and have a better life than most. Then we have the person who lives in the temporal world. The temporal world is the world that is according to how the mind thinks it is all the time. There's very little connection to the heart, and there's almost zero connection to the inner heart. The temporal world lives under the belief systems, the ideals, what you've been told, the indirect curses we receive as children. You're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, maybe you should do this, or you'll never get here, you'll never get there, or you should become this, you're really good at it. Anybody who lives under those outside influences are living in what we call a temporal world. The temporal world measures us by what we do, never who we are. And you can often hear people introduce themselves as, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm an accountant. Well, the esoteric would say it, I'm Tom, I practice medicine. I'm Jane, I practice accountancy. I'm Peter, so and so. They would never introduce themselves as what they do, as who they are. The exoteric would, of course, say, I'm a doctor. So it's still not quite the way to be. However, when you connect to the inner heart and the esoteric way doesn't disregard the exoteric and the temporal. It says we have a very real and practical human life to live. But it impulses the exoteric under an esoteric impulse, and it impulses the temporal life, the practical way of living, with a very loving impulse. So we still want to go out to work, we still want to be cleaners, we still want to be street sweepers, we still want to be carpenters, electricians and doctors. But the impulse to serve isn't by the recognition that the temporal world, or the lack of recognition that the temporal world has put you in, but rather than seeing that with your loving heart you can make a difference in everything that you do. For those who live strictly in the temporal and have very little influence, if any at all, from the esoteric, then life is very difficult because they're always trying to match up to what they can be or cannot be in accordance to what they believe they are or what they believe they are not. And it's quite a miserable way of living. It's a miserable way of life, and it's a constant struggle. For some, that struggle reverts to alcohol, drugs, and or both. For some, it becomes a spiritual new age path that is laced with distraction, numbness, and the pursuit of enlightenment, which you can never have without the soul. For others, it's pure indulgence into work, enmeshing themselves into enormous amounts of hours, including studies and further developments. And all of that is somebody just escaping the fact that they miss something. There's something missing, and that missing is the inner heart, the innermost connection we all know we have that the temporal life doesn't promote.
Thank you, Serge. Okay, so this is the message from Serge in Universal Medicine for 2010. Our guest this morning is Serge Ben-Hayen from Universal Medicine. Serge is the focalizer and the third transmitter of the Ancient Wisdom. Serge was on this program at the end of November, and we had a segment during that interview in which I asked questions on behalf of other people. And we'll be doing that again later in today's program, Serge. But for now, I wanted to go back to one of the questions from last time in which someone was asking about reincarnation. And in responding to that, you answered just a quick line that the soul always resides on the soul plane. And that seemed to raise even more questions for many of the listeners. So I wanted to revisit that comment. And I just wondered, before we go right into that, that the soul is always residing on the soul plane, perhaps you could give us just a little background on how the soul came into being.
The soul itself is what we could call, from an occult point of view, if we use occult science, the soul is the individuated expression of the livingness of God. And so it is an expression that is eternally love. The soul cannot leave love. It gets very long and complicated after that, because there is the opportunity to separate an aspect of that in its individuation, in its own expression. And it's in that separation that we ended up having what we can call the spirit of the soul. The initial first separation, the spirit of the soul, had an expression that was very like soul. But after a while, instead of returning back to soul, that spirit, we could say, became very happy with itself, became very enchanted with its power, its creation, its ability to do lots of things, and then it became individuated and self-recognized, and it forgot that it needed to come back, or chose, we should say, is a better word, to not come back. Mm-hmm. It then dwelled for many, many eons on its own, and in its own creation, by creating, every time we express, we create energy. By creating their own expression, they basically created their own plane of existence. And that plane of existence developed a life for that separated, individuated part we call spirit. After a while, that spirit said, well, we have the power of creation just like soul does. We, in fact, come from God. The problem is that the spirit acts and thinks individually in separation to the impulse, whereas the soul is always under the impress of the divine logos that created us, in other words, God. The individuated part is the spirit that says, okay, I've got all this power, what can I do with it? Whereas the soul never says, I've got this power, what can I do with it? It says, what is there to be done? Mm-hmm. And serves the impress or the impulse. So that, to cut a long story short, that spirit not only maintained the existence of that new plane it created for itself so that it could have its own individuated or individualized expression and life, it then later went on to create what we have today, and this is cutting a long story short, the human being.
The ego. So the spirit is like the ego?
The spirit is the ego, but the ego is the fullness of that first part that's separated from the soul. So the ego is actually a good part. Where the ego goes wrong is where it then expresses from itself instead of returning from the soul. So the ego on its own is fine, and it's a good start because it gives us a bridge to the soul. And so it's important to be egoic at one point, which is the heart, before we go into the inner heart, which is the soul. So the ego is in the heart. The problem is when the ego expresses, it doesn't express with the soul, so it leaves the heart and uses what we call the human mind, or the lower mind, the human brain, or the part that thinks, as its expressing tool. And when the ego does that, it does that in separation to its divinity. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've ended up as the species known as human beings, with all the calamity and wars and things that we've had, illness and disease.
Yeah. It feels like we're in a bit of a pickle here. We've really wandered far from home, and we didn't quite leave big enough breadcrumbs for many of us to find our way back out of the wilderness. But it is possible.
It's very possible, because the imprint or the impress of who we truly are remains eternally within, in the innermost. That's mm-hmm. what the esoteric is about, the fact that we are already everything. There's a part in one of my books where it says, one day, many, many, many years from today, mankind will sit back and say, wow, how ridiculous it is that all we've come all this way to realize that all we had to do was to go back.
Yeah. Okay, so the soul, all the souls are all equal.
Absolutely.
So this thing about soulmates, we're all soulmates, we're all equal. There's no one special soul that another soul's connected to. We're all the same soul.
No. They're all spiritual reinterpretations. There is no one soulmate. There is no one person that is meant for you for the rest of your life. There is none of that romantic, emotional type of love that we as human beings wish there is. The fact is, you can love anybody eternally. And once you love your partner, you can love everybody equally. That doesn't mean you go around and have making love and sleep, at least sleep around. You can only do that with one other person. But the actual love that you have for your children shouldn't be any different to the children next door and everybody that you meet. The moment we can say, as the New Year's message says, that we have love for one more than any other, we are then dwelling with the energy of the heart and not the inner heart. And that's a big illusion that traps everybody. So there are heaps of souls, we could say. Bring it down to an easy language.
There's
heaps of
language.
There's heaps of souls. But altogether, there's only one soul, because no one soul will express in any way, shape, or form that is in disharmony to any other soul. And that's why it's called the one soul. Because every soul expresses in the same harmony, in the same stillness, in the same joy, and in the same love as every other soul. It's only the spirit that's able to individualize itself and either make itself better in life or worse in life.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think was going on that day that God, the Supreme Being, the Great Creator, said to itself, I'm going to create myself? What was going on there? So why did God decide to breathe out souls? Was it to experience its own self?
The part we call God is the fathering energy that enhouses the created units of expression. There's another part of God that is higher, and that part of God that is higher is called logoic energy, or logos. A logos is assigned a part of a universe to increase its size. The universes are increasing in size, and we create space by creating more of the one same love. And Logos is responsible for creating itself into many parts. Those many parts then create themselves to equal to the part that created them. And when they come together, the Logos is now twice as big as when he started. That then expands the universe. You know, we could teach Stephen Hawking a few things here and make it easier for him. That's how it happens. But the problem is that when you are that supreme love, you can't order your parts to be. Those parts must have the same freedom and individuality to choose on the free will to become part of the part that created them or the whole that created them. So when that Logos created us, we had a choice. And not everybody, but a lot, made the choice to individualize and experience what that was like, to have that sort of power.
Okay, so we're not going to be able to walk that return path on our lonesome.
No.
Like, you know, maybe you're going to get there. That looks pretty good chances for you, but you can't get there without the rest of us. Is that right?
The law is that nobody can get there without everybody getting there. And those who are closer to getting there are assigned the responsibility to help all others get to that same position they are. They are never to hold the higher position, because they feel less by holding themselves in that higher position. The idea or the impulse as you get closer to your soul is to create equalness and oneness. So let's say, for example, we have a corporation where one reaches the CEO, Chief Executive Officer, and is the leader. Well, under the, if the soul owned that company, that CEO would forever work to make sure that everybody else becomes the CEO as soon as possible. They cannot remain CEO while there's somebody who's not a CEO. That then becomes the sole role and responsibility and job, if we could say, of a soul if it was a CEO. So nobody can get to the end without making sure everybody's with you at the end.
On board, okay. So what do you think the chances are of that now that there's 6 billion of us here?
The problem with bringing more love to the world is the fact that most people are exposed in the lovelessness that they are in. I've written in the 6 books that we've got, only 5 have been released, but all of them mention the fact that the greatest problem for the spirit that became the human being is pride. And they don't want to be exposed as being fooled. And so when you get exposed as being with a false guru, a false energy, a false healing modality, following this consciousness or that consciousness, discovering that your yoga wasn't really a true energy but a spiritual pranic version, you clamber down and you try to protect that choice. You try to say, no, this has helped me. This has got me better. This has got me more knowledge. I'm more informed. And nobody likes to check into their body to see if there is true love or not in the body. And so the pride kicks in, and most people tend to dig their heels in. And the one thing that they tend to attack most is the esoteric, because that is the reflection that is saying that is loveless. So you go to the extreme most point, which is love, the esoteric way of being, and that's the one that you hate most, because if you were to in any way, shape or form say that's true, then you have to be accountable for the choices that you have made have left you in the lovelessness. That's why we're sometimes hated, which is okay.
Okay, well, thank you for all that, Serge. I can follow that. So, in a way, that brings us to then the esoteric medicine branch of universal medicine, because while this philosophical viewpoint exists within esoteric way of life and esoteric medicine, and it's quite interesting, especially for Sagittarians like myself who are born philosophers, does astrology fit into esoteric?
Esoteric astrology is welcomed, but I know very little about that.
Okay, well, I'll have to find out what the descriptions of Sagittarians are in esoteric philosophy. In traditional astrology, Sagittarians love philosophy, so I can get very lost in the esoteric philosophy. and only recently have gotten tuned in to how important the esoteric medicine work is that's being done by Universal Medicine. And last interview, we talked quite a lot about that. Our guest today is Serge Ben-Hayen. You can find out more about his work from universalmedicine.com.au. And Serge, I'm guessing that most people find their way into esoteric medicine because they've possibly reached some sort of crisis in their life. It could be a spiritual crisis or a medical crisis. And from an esoteric point of view, they're probably much the same, aren't they?
One and the same.
But esoteric medicine for the future is going to be a very big part of the work, because we're in such a medical crisis. Our physical bodies are just screaming out in every direction, be it heart attacks or cancer, of course, prevalent everywhere, diabetes. Now, another term that you mentioned in the last interview was multi-symptomatic man. And then just a few days later, like 2 days later, there was an article in The Australian. That was the issue of December 2nd, for anyone who's interested in researching that. And they're talking about, it's kind of hard to capture statistics in a radio format because you can't really see them, but in this article they were talking about a report that's been done with general practitioners who report that there's this incredible increase. People used to come to the GP with one ailment. This was wrong. Now they're coming with two, and in the last 10 years, so that's been this last decade, they say there's an increase of something like 5 million consultations where people are now bringing two health problems. There's a big increase about people bringing three health problems, and big increase with people bringing four. So I'm assuming this is what you mean by the term the multi-symptomatic man. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I first termed that back in 2001 and made it a little bit of a prediction. Not that I enjoy making predictions like that, but you've got to remember that whilst I'm an author and teacher and presenter and so forth, I work in a clinic, and that's my day job, and that's what I love and do. And I get to see bodies every single day. I see bodies here, and I see thousands and thousands of bodies in a year, both here and in the UK and Europe and so forth. And these bodies are presenting like never before, an enormous amount of multi-symptoms and the complications that occur at different stages are bamboozling, we could say, the medical fraternity. And I've had specialists, not just GPs, but specialists say to me that they're not trained academically, scientifically, to deal with the types of symptoms that they are now presented with by the GP. And it's often not just another specialist in the same field giving you a second opinion, but several different types of specialists trying to give you a diagnosis. And that's the reality of where we're at today. And we've got to get very, very real about what's going on. We can't continue to boast about having amazing technology and the latest, greatest surfboard and how many fins you're riding with these days, or the greatest iPod and iPhone and so forth, when we have a situation where almost every disease is now being inside the statistics of 1 in 3 or 1 in 4. We as Australians have a diabetes situation where there is a fresh diagnosis every 7 minutes. That's incredible. That's not some, I'm 46 this year. That's not something I grew up with in my teens when I was a kid. Heart attacks were common. Stress was just starting to take off. But cancer was something very rare. You know, today cancer is 1 in 3 or 1 in 4. When you have a situation where there is one single region in the world that has 45,600 women per year being diagnosed with a fresh new diagnosis of cancer, breast cancer, you've got to stop and say, well, what has my greatest iPhone got to do with that? What's my fastest computer chip have anything to do with that? You know, we are celebrating a lot of great advancements, but it's an enormous cost to our true daily life.
Mm-hmm. And with the energetic medicine, of course, prevention is greater than any cure. So for those of us who are not yet suffering from any of those illnesses, we can start some preventative work by taking care of our own energy and our own body. And but for people who have already gotten far down the road into illness, then energy medicine can help that, working in conjunction with a medical practitioner or individually. How do you work with people who are really critically ill?
Before I answer that, let's say that scientifically everything is energy and we can't move away from that fact. We have to live with the fact that everything is energy. That means that cancer, diabetes, has to be a form of energy. It is an energy and therefore it is a form of energy. Esoteric medicine works on the basis that if everything is energy, everything is because of energy. So if we have a certain energy in the body we can call cancer, scientifically diagnosed and assessed, then we say, great, that's a cancer. We know that medically, we know that scientifically. But for us, we deal with the energetic version of that. And we try to look for, by the knowledge that we have with the esoteric body, using anatomy and physiology under an esoteric principle, we can find the root cause of that cancer. And we can start working with it on an energetic level. For example, in breast cancer, there is a shutting down of the ovaries for a woman. A woman is in self-loathing. A woman is in disregard. These are behaviors that cause certain energetic flows in the body. Those behaviors then get magnified by each day living in disregard and each day living in self-loathing. They then break down certain parts of the body. In this case, it could be endometriosis, or it could be breast cancer, it could be ovarian cancer. Where it ends up is a more scientific level, and the doctors do a fantastic job at that, and I'm very, very proud of medicine, conventional medicine. But we need to marry that with an esoteric version of it that says that just as you get the lump taken out of your breast, just as you are operated on for endometriosis, you need to deal with the energetic version of what led to that being what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why esoteric medicine is very, very important. And I mentioned at the last interview that I hope that in the future conventional medicine endorses in full the esoteric approach, because it is very, very sensible and it's not wishy-washy. It is a very, very scientific, energetic approach to the already established scientific medical version mm-hmm. of medicine.
And something that, because we did cover a few of those last interview, we won't repeat, but we didn't talk about gallbladder and gallstones, and I've had a couple of people inquiring if you could speak briefly on the energy behind gallbladder problems or gallstones.
Well, you know, in the future, I'd like to do some form of talkback radio where people can ring in and talk about their conditions, and we can do an energetic reading over the airwaves. But gallbladder, from an esoteric point of view, is simply this: the gallbladder is responsible for great reasoning, higher understanding, and clarity of thought, and it's the organ that impulses the higher mind with philosophical thinking. It's wonderful. The counterversion of the gallbladder in separation, in other words, under the impulse or the energy of the spirit, the gallbladder then becomes the organ that has to withstand frustration, resentment, bitterness, and rage. So anybody with gallbladder conditions, whether you've been the gallbladder has been pulled out or cut open, operated on, gallstones and so forth, they have to look at the fact that the stones themselves are a healing. They are accumulating the excess of frustration or resentment or bitterness or rage or all of them all at once. The way we work is that we say that is a healing. Now let's go to the doctor and let's complete the healing in whatever way, shape or form the doctor decides and whatever medicine is prescribed. So what we've got to say is if there's a liver condition, for example, liver is anger. It's the organ that is responsible for harmony in the body, the distribution of our gentleness throughout the body. But if we deny our gentleness, the liver can, under the influence of the spirit, transform itself into an organ that energetically emanates throughout the body hardness. And that hardness eventually becomes a self-protective mechanism we call anger. So we've got to understand the organs. Isn't this is why I'll be releasing a few books, and our teachings over the next 3 or 4 years will be very centered on esoteric medicine. I mean, I've been doing this since 1999. It's not new to people who know me, but we're going to put it out on a broader scale so that people can start dealing with their issues now and not wait later to come in for a treatment when it's already third or fourth stage cancer or kidney condition and so forth. And that's the purpose of how we're going to direct our new arcane project. We've just completed 3 years of sutras, and we're now going to do an arcane project with its focus on esoteric medicine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Serge. You're tuned to BFM, and I'm filling in for Desanella on Colors of Byron. They'll be back in 2 weeks' time. My name is Gail Q. Our guest is Serge Ben-Hayen. Now, I've given you his website, universalmedicine.com.au, and should make mention that he's got 5 books out at the moment, although mysteriously book 4 is not actually in print. So you'll find up to book 6 is out, and that's just come out in between our interview last November and this one. And much of the first part of this program, which was very deep and philosophical and probably raises just as many questions as it answers, if you're really into that line of thinking, you can find out more about that from book 1, The Way It Is, and book 2, A Treatise on Consciousness. So there is more information in case you're left hanging on a limb out there. Now, Serge, I want to get to the questions, because we've opened something up last time when we started questions from others who don't get the opportunity to ask you in person.
Go for it.
Okay, well, we've got a few, so I'm just even trying to rejuggle a little bit to see which ones we get in. I've grouped them kind of under topics to get them together. So philosophy, back where we started the program, a listener is wondering if praying is part of esoteric philosophy. They hadn't heard you speak about it before. And, yeah, just comment on praying and who you pray to.
Yeah, the act of prayer is communication, and it should be as natural as speaking to anybody. And so praying to God should be communication. To call it prayer, I guess, identifies it more in the traditional religious context, or as religions as we know them today. Religion to me is relationship with God in the true meaning of the word religion. And so you should be able to just communicate. So prayer is, in effect, the way you live all day. Mm-hmm. You are, in effect, in prayer when you're harmonious and your movements are gentle. And every time you express a loving gesture in any way, shape, or form, to me, that is an instant prayer.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. The next question is, how does distance healing work? Do you tune into a person as an individual, and how do you do that?
There are many different ways of distance healing. The main way to distance heal someone is to connect to them and just heal whatever part is calling you to act, and not to get involved in the stories or the symptoms of what's going on. Because distance healing is very, very powerful, and sometimes we tend to put too much intention into distance healing, and that can get us in trouble, in the sense that we can pick up on the unresolved poisons of another who are not ready to be healed. If we tap into those areas, then we are taking on their energy, which is absorbing it, and it's quite poisonous for us. So distance healing is a beautiful practice. It's very, very powerful, always works, so long as the intention is to heal what is there offered to you to heal from a distance, and not to go into the story or the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean you or any other distance healer would only heal somebody who has asked for it, rather than some third party who may ask you to heal someone else?
In general, you know, you can always ask God to help somebody, And that's an act of communication, which is, again, prayer. The thing is, again, when you're asking on behalf of someone, there should be no intent into the story or the symptom. So, please, God, can you heal so-and-so's cancer? You just say, God, can you be with Samantha? Please, God, can you be with John? You know, something like that, or God be with. And that's enough. God knows what to do. Mm-hmm. There's no need for us to give him instructions.
Okay.
And so the act of distance healing is very similar. When we connect to someone, it's an act of being with them that is the healing. The greatest form of illness on earth is the disconnection that we have on everyday life. And so therefore, a distance healing is a connection in itself, without even trying, is already a healing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. Crystals. Well, I asked you earlier in the program if astrology had any relevance, and you said esoteric astrology. Do crystals have healing powers, and do they have a place in esoteric medicine?
Crystals are beautiful creations of Earth, and they're amazing stones and rocks to look at and so forth, and they make wonderful adornments around the house. But in esoteric medicine, all power is in the inner heart, and there's nothing outside of us that's more powerful. Where the crystals undo themselves, or people undo themselves with crystals, is where they give power to the crystal to be this or that for them, or that it represents this or that. Sure, the color of a crystal has an enormous healing quality, but that is to work with us as an assistance, but it is not the healing component. The healing component is always our inner heart. And so we can use crystals to assist, but never are they the healing object. We are the healing object.
Right. Okay. Clear.
I'm a fan of crystals. I like them, but they've got to be used correctly.
Uh-huh. All right. This next couple of questions are more in a different category of medication and vitamins. This person takes a prescription medication for approximately 6 years as a preventative. Every time I try to go off the medication, I have a flare-up of the problem it's suppressing. So is it possible to take a regular prescription medication and still lead an esoteric life, or suggestions on how to get off of long-term prescriptions?
You can be totally esoteric and still be on medication, as prescribed by the doctor to help you get better. The problem is, if we use any form of medication to check out, to be in disregard, to not deal with our conditions, to not heal, to use it as an escape or an excuse or even as a remedy, then it's no different to cannabis or alcohol, in the sense, energetically speaking, mm-hmm. of course, in the sense that we're using something to muffle what there is there to be healed. As I keep repeating, I'm very pro of medicine, very pro of pharmacology when it's used in the correct way. And most doctors, 9 out of 10, use it in the correct way. And so when you're given medicine to heal with an ailment that requires medicine, you can lovingly make that medicine and its chemistry, its compound, work for you in a very healing way. That which we can do with medicine. We can't do that with alcohol or cannabis or any other form of drugs, but we can with medicine. So the idea is to say, okay, I'm on this medication, let's work on self-love, let's work on me, let's work on total regard, let's work on gentleness. And you'll find that the medicine works even better. And then after a while, you might feel that you don't need as much. And that's where you consult your GP. And in consultation with the GP, you can work towards reducing the medicine if you feel that it's not needed. And I'm sure the GP will have a test, a way of reducing it slowly and seeing. Now, coming off medicine, sometimes the reactions isn't so much that we need the medicine, but the addiction to the medicine. So the doctors are well equipped with dealing with that. But what we need to do is not go to the doctor and say, I want to come off this medicine. Let's do our work first on ourselves and make it easier for the GP to have a body to work with, instead of the bodies we take to the doctor and lace them with all our problems we don't want to deal with, and then expect the doctor to solve them there and there with the magic pill. That's the problem with our relationship with medicine, not medicine itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, this one's a little bit similar, but it's about vitamins. So if everything is energy, in theory, we could hold our health just energetically, but given depleted soil and all the things in today's world, this person's inclined to take vitamins. They've heard you talk about re-imprinting the vitamins. What do you mean by that?
The same way I mentioned earlier with medicines. You can take vitamins, but not if you feel that they are the answer. Vitamins and medicines assist us to heal. If we are taking vitamins to assist us in the healing process, then they will work for us. If we take them as the answer to our problems, then they don't heal, because you're giving your power away to something, therefore becoming less in yourself. So if you've made the decision to begin a healing process, and in that process you say, wow, I'm mineral deficient, and I start taking magnesium, zinc, potassium, and so forth, then they will coordinate, the word is configure, towards helping you in that process. But if I say I'm deficient or I'm low and I just go for minerals per se, but don't change any of my lifestyle, then there is no energetic connection to the vitamins and minerals.
Mm-hmm.
So we are to have a energetic relationship with what we take, crystals, vitamins, minerals, and so forth.
Of course.
It's very simple.
Very clear now. Okay, well, I haven't been very good about announcing music this morning. Might give you a quick rundown at the end of the show, because, of course, I get so interested in wanting to hear what Serge has got to say that I'm just moving through that music quickly. So this is our last little segment with Serge Ben-Hayen this morning, and we're asking questions. I'm asking questions on behalf of people who can't be here in person. Now, these next four questions, Serge, are all under the category of diet, so to speak. That many people would like you to speak more about diet, because they understand that alcohol and drugs are not an acceptable thing to do to our human body. And some of us can even understand not drinking coffee, because it is actually just a mild legalized drug, which takes us off center. But where people start really going, why, is around gluten-free and dairy-free diet. So could you explain why you encourage people? Is that fair to say, that you encourage people? No?
No, okay. I'm on record, and anybody can test, over the last 10 years, I do not tell anybody what to do. Mm-hmm. We don't encourage. We simply present.
Okay.
The energetic aspects of the esoteric principles.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. So what are the energetic aspects of gluten-free and dairy-free? Because I guess, like I said at the beginning of the program, you lead by example. And I think you probably are gluten-free and dairy-free.
I'm gluten-free, dairy-free, coffee-free, alcohol, sugar-free, mm-hmm. You know, all of that. I work 18 to sometimes 19 hours per day. And yeah. I don't go to bed tired, and I don't wake up tired.
Well, that's true. So what is it about gluten that is energetically not good for us?
Well, I hope this doesn't arouse more chaos out there. Energetically, gluten is a very dulling food, and it dulls our light in our body. Now, for those who don't want to shine, for those who have an issue with standing out, for those who were cursed, you know, didn't get embellished by their parents or cherished and so forth, it suits to dull yourself, to take you away, to numb yourself. Gluten is responsible largely for a lot of bloating. It's dulling, it takes energy away from you, and it increases your appetite for sugar. I don't want to take it more than that, but just okay. To say that it's a dulling food and it dulls your light.
Uh-huh. And what about dairy? Why are your preference?
The energy of dairy is an energy that helps you comfort your childhood issues. Dairy is a very comfort-eating food. That's why, you know, dairy chocolate is a big winner for many people, because it's a very comforting food. And we're not designed to have, we don't have three or four stomachs like a cow does. We're not designed to have dairy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a fact. we can have it, of course. The human body can take lots of things. You know, it can drink a bottle of scotch and still deal with it. The point is, at what expense is this going on in the body? And once you start to deal with the body energetically, is it worth the body losing energy in digesting something when it could easily digest something much easier, faster, and have more energy in the process? And that then becomes the choice of every individual. It's not for Serge or anyone to say, have this or have that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sort of leads right into the next question, which is probably the biggest inflammatory statement you make around diet, which is chocolate. And now you've clarified dairy chocolate, and this particular questioner would like to know about dark chocolate, organic chocolate, one that doesn't have dairy in it. Still not so good?
It's not that it's not so good. It's, you know, chocolate
yummy.
Is yes, yummy. It's delicious. You know, we've got to be honest. It's a big winner. It's a wonderful food. It's a great satisfaction in the mouth. What we say at Universal Medicine, with esoteric medicine in view, is that we are programmed to enjoy food from our five senses. What we should connect to is what is really going on immediately thereafter. Sure, anybody will enjoy a family block of chocolate in their mouth, and it takes 10 to 20 minutes or sometimes sooner than that to finish. But what actually happens after?
And
how do we really feel in the body, energetically?
Okay.
How does our mind feel? Is it stimulated by the sugar? Are we duller? Are we more comfortable by the dairy component? Or in the case of dairy-free dark chocolate, for example, which is a great step away from the normal chocolate, and that we can say is a great step away from it. It is still a stimulation. It is still seeking some form of satisfaction. Now, I say if you need chocolate to make you happy in any way, shape, or form, or to bring you a reward, which is what it really is as well, or to bring any other form of satisfaction in there, then you've got to stop and say, well, there's something going on in my life that is not so great that it requires that form of reward. And that's where the esoteric philosophy and principles come in. Because people have to say, then, it's not about whether I have dairy chocolate or dark chocolate. It's why do I need such stimulation in the first place? What part of my life is not enough that needs either a reward or some form of distraction through being stimulated by our taste senses?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a bit harsh, but from an energetic point of view, it has a great impact in us. And I treat bodies every day, you know, Monday to Friday, I treat bodies and have done for 10 years. And you can see the effects of food in people's bodies. And so the question isn't about the ideals and beliefs or what we've been taught by the marketing campaigns, is to go back and truly feel energetically what is going on in the body. One, and two, why is it that we seek those foods? And if you can stop and feel at that moment, just before you open the fridge to have your chocolate, where are you at that moment that makes you want to have it? And you'll find that you're not with yourself.
Okay.
Really with yourself. Hard as it is.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, chocolate lovers. You can hate Serge, but that's the facts.
Now, so just a little more clarification there on chocolate. Is it a short-term effect on the body or a long-term effect on the body to process chocolate?
It makes you feel happy because of the sugar. You get an up and your nervous system gets stimulated and so forth, as well as other your senses are a little heightened, so you get that happy feel about it. But that drops almost straight away. Now, that's not for me to talk about because I'm not a dietitian, naturopath, and so forth. Energetically, however, it does drop you very low, and it makes you seek happiness in that reward instead of finding what it is that you don't have that makes you seek that in the first place.
Uh-huh.
That's the healing part of why we say, hey, have a look at why you're needing this stuff in the first place. And dairy takes about 3 months to energetically complete itself out of the body. Not just to digest it, which might take 3 to 4 days, but energetically it takes about 3 months. So those who go on a dairy-free diet, you won't get the benefits for after well after the 3 months.
Hmm. Okay. And so I guess for, you know, many people, the craving for chocolate actually comes more towards evening at the end of a long day. And so this questioner was asking, why was that? Why is the craving for chocolate doesn't happen during the day, but it happens in the evening?
I'll be strictly esoteric here, so I'm not being labeled trying to be a diet specialist and so forth. Strictly from an esoteric point of view, your day is not enough. You're not being with yourself. If you are, you are fulfilled and full of joy in whatever that it is that you do, whether you clean, whether you're a carpenter, electrician, or accountant. And therefore, at the end of the day, you look back at it in the completeness of having done all that if you are with yourself. But if you're not with yourself, if you're checked out, if you're in your head, if you're escaping, daydream, and so forth, the end of the day needs a reward because it wasn't for you a great day. And we've got to be honest, we are rewarding ourselves when we go to the fridge and have chocolate. We are rewarding ourselves every time we have sugar or any other form of like stimulation. The point is, why do we need to reward ourselves when it's quite beautiful being with yourself in everything that you do? The reward is that in itself. Why does it need to be rewarded at the end of the day?
Okay, there you go, folks. Serge Ben-Hayen from universalmedicine.com.au here on Bay FM. Thank you so much, Serge, for coming in with your New Year's message and all the information that you've shared with our listeners here this morning. I hope we can do it again sometime, but of course we have no idea when that might be.
Thank you to you, Gail, and thanks to Bay FM. Mm.
Serge Ben-Hayen is the founder and director of Universal Medicine. The essence of the work that flows through him is in line with that which can be called sacred and esoteric by nature. It's non-traditional, following no allegiance to any cult, form, or belief, other than that which is found intuitively at the heart center in accordance with the spirit of the hierarchy. No claims are made other than the stance that the work, like all other before us, should always be ascertained by the individual to be the work of truth or not. I'm Gail Q. Thanks to Serge for coming in this morning. And of course, all disclaimers to Bay FM, its management and staff. That was Serge and Universal Medicine.